This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
7:48 right now. You're listening to The Morning Run. I'm Melissa Idris with Tan Chung Han. Now, Julian Ng has just stepped out to speak to our Breakfast Grill guest this morning, Yeb Sanyo. He's the executive director of Greenpeace Southeast Asia. Of course, Greenpeace is the independent campaigning organization, which according to their website, they aim to use nonviolent creative confrontation to expose global environmental problems and to force solutions which are essential to a green and peaceful future. So I think the key issue that Julian will be trying to tackle this morning on the Breakfast Grill is the issue of how global environmental policies can be executed, and if the environment takes precedence over human development. It's an issue that's pertinent to developing countries like Malaysia. And we'll love to hear what Greenpeace's take is on that.
Yeah, very often we talk about how human development and economic development comes at the cost of the environment, right? But I think moving forward, in order to have a peaceful future, as he calls it, right? Peaceful future.
Green
and peaceful and a sustainable one. I think, you know, we have to start changing that mindset and think about how economic development and human development can grow in tandem with preserving the natural elements.
Well, if you'd like to join the conversation on the Breakfast Grill today with Greenpeace, you can text us at 016-201-9000 or WhatsApp us if you prefer. That's 016-201-9000 or tweet us at BFM Radio, hashtag tell BFM. We'll pass along your questions to Yeb Sanyo, Executive Director of Greenpeace Asia, Southeast Asia. That's coming up in just about 15 minutes or so. But first, as promised, the big stories in the local business pages today. Prima is the cover story of The Edge Weekly. Now, Perbadanan Prima Malaysia is really struggling with a target of 500,000 affordable homes in 5 years. And one of the stumbling blocks to that has been land issues and reluctant private developers to help it meet its target.
Yeah, you've certainly hit the nail on the head there, Melissa. You know, so looking at this really extensive cover story from The Edge Weekly here, well done. You know, they have added some numbers. I mean, granted, these numbers have been carried in other media reports as well. But for example, they've got the total completed units now at 17,000 in 2 years. Again, these are Prima home units that we're talking about here. So 17,000 versus the target of 500,000. That's a long ways to go, people. Right. So again, those challenges are certainly, if you look at the numbers, those challenges are certainly very pronounced and very evident here. And essentially, boils down to us, the middle class, right? Well, I guess specifically for those who are earning between households who are earning monthly incomes of between 3,860 ringgit and 8,319 ringgit. That's the government's definition of middle income. So that group who essentially has been priced out of the more lucrative and more the tastier segments of the property market. So the government is trying to step in with Prima, but yet they've obviously been facing some really monumental challenges here.
Well, for me, I think the biggest question, whenever I think about Prima and affordable housing, my biggest question is, okay, so who's building the homes? Is it Prima? Is it private developers? And what's compelling, if it is private developers, what's compelling them to play by the rules of the game? So I believe it's a kind of a private developer strategy, right? So Prima and all its units under Prima, they work with private developers and get developers to build these affordable homes. But again, at the end of the day, what's incentivizing the private developers from doing so? Because they can build $1 million condos and get huge margins as opposed to a 350,000 landed property and get very, very slim margins.
Yeah, indeed. And then often when we talk about the lack of housing, then very often the disgruntled customer base would immediately point an instinctive finger at the government. But from this article, at least one thing that we're learning is that the government, there is no lack of trying from the government. They they announced this PRIMA program back in 2011. But since then, progress has been slow, you know, given the kind of roadblocks that you mentioned earlier, right? You know, again, what's going to incentivize these private developers, yeah, you know, from giving up these lands that have been earmarked for other purposes and perhaps more lucrative purposes? You know, why give that up just to, you know, satiate this group of middle-income earners, right? Because for the private sector, they're saying, well, that's not my job. That's the government's job, right? You deal with it, right? Yeah. You know, like, I will go about chasing my profits as I see fit.
Well, I think that the other biggest issue also, Han, is the land bank issue. Now, this was a bit surprising to me because, you know, essentially, land is a resource that the government owns. So why would there be, you know, a lack of this resource? They can easily convert land banks that they, you know, they feel is necessary or required for building PRIMA homes. But apparently, according to PRIMA, quoted by The Edge Weekly, they were hoping, in order to deliver 500,000 homes, PRIMA estimates that it will need about 12,500 acres based on a plot ratio assumption, about 40 units per acre. So in the early days, they were hoping to get some land and they negotiated with the various government agencies to get this. But at the end of the day, they didn't get the land. So the land that they wanted was earmarked for other development. So I think at the end of the day, the question is, where is affordable housing in the list of priorities for the government?
Yeah, I mean, that's a very valid point. But then at the same time, look, when we talk about the property sector here in Malaysia and when it comes to the demands of, you know, the prospective Malaysian home buyer, you know, we're, generally speaking, we're a picky lot. That is a reason why the Klang Valley, you know, prices are skyrocketing when, you know, plots of land or like developments in the greater Klang Valley or these, you know, they come up with these really funny names like Puchong South and, you know, something
branding,
South.
Yeah, you know, branding.
You know, like, when it comes to the outskirts and all, then people don't want to go there, although, or they're less inclined to go there, right? You know, so they still want all these hotspots. They want a convenience of, you know, PJ, of KL, of Subang, right? You know, so again, I think there are many stakeholders involved here. It's not just the government and the agencies, you know, but it is also, Melissa, you talk about where does it stack up in the list of priorities. Mm. Likewise, you know, private developers have to be asked that same question as well. You know, obviously, as we find out, not very high on their list. But then at the same time, you know, us home buyers as well, right? We have to also ask ourselves, if let's say these PRIMA homes are built, and you know, looking at this article, there are some 260,000 units that have been approved by the PRIMA board. So now they have been approved. Once they actually get built, and you know, who knows where they would be built, but once they are built, would the prospective Malaysian home buyer even want to go and buy it over there, or they're going to hold on and say, no, we prefer something closer to, you know, or in PJ, right? So it's a bit of wishful thinking. So again, there are many stakeholders involved, there are many moving parts, and I think everybody, you know, kind of needs to temper and manage their expectations. Well, I think that's a key takeaway that I'm getting from this story.
Financing was also one of the moving parts, isn't it? And that was also addressed by the PRIMA and financing scheme that we talked about recently, where PRIMA home buyers can just pay only the monthly interest for the first 5 years. Now, there are issues with that as well. But again, you're right, many moving parts of this story. But we will come back to this issue of PRIMA time and again, I think, as we, you know, unfold the affordable housing issue. But let's move on to Corporate Malaysia. Air Asia Group, they say they will push for higher passenger load while keeping a tight lid on costs to sustain earnings this year. And this is to mitigate the effects from rising oil prices and volatility in the currency. The group CEO, Tony Fernandez, said that he forecasts about 10% of revenue growth this year after a similar jump to 6.9 billion ringgit last year.
Yeah, so net profit, though, for last year came in at over 2 billion ringgit, 2.03 billion to be precise, largely due from higher sales, lower fuel costs, and also, you know, the less intense competition from their rivals. Now, you know, when speaking about fuel, obviously that's one of the key components to their operating costs there, right? And I recall Tony Fernandez mentioning earlier this year saying that Air Asia as a group has hedged about, I believe, 70% of their fuel needs for this entire year. So that may bode well in terms of their bottom line. But, you know, yeah, generally speaking, I remember your discussion with Mohsin Aziz, the analyst. Yeah, talking about how last year was a banner year.
It was.
Right, and then looks like, according to these comments by Tony Fernandez, you know, 2017 2016 should be a pretty, you know, fun year for them
but
as well.
But, you know, it was a banner. 2016 was a banner year, unexpectedly. So against all odds, everyone thought it was not going to be a banner year. So I wonder what this means, you know, if you're saying it's going to be a great year. Maybe it's still too early to tell. We are still in the month of February. But let's keep an eye on this. We want to see AirAsia, kind of AirAsia's growth strategy, especially in this coming year. Well, let's move on to RHB. RHB Bank, it's expecting a better 2017 with less expenditure for impairments and provisions and a turnaround in its operations in Singapore. Now, this is especially important because impairments and provisions, as well as the Singapore operations, was impacted by the oil and gas exposure last year.
Yeah, you know, so oil and gas, certainly a theme, not just on the fiscal front, right, for the government, not just a theme for us motorists when we look at RON 95 prices, but also when it comes to, you know, corporate Malaysia, well, just corporate anybody, really, you know. Remember in Singapore as well, you've got, you know, firms that are defaulting on loans, you know.
Swiber,
and that's also having a feed-through effect into the banks down there, you know, those mega banks down there. So, you know, Malaysian banks, no exception there. You know, oil and gas, certainly a rocky patch. I mean, yeah, you know, it's rebounded to above, what, $50 a barrel? No, we'll see if that lasts, though.
Okay, we've got The Breakfast Grill with Yeb Sanyo, Executive Director of Greenpeace Southeast Asia, coming up just after the 8 o'clock news bulletin, next on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.